Bankless Nation. Welcome to another Ask Me Anything. This is your opportunity to ask questions of our guests. And this guest is, we're pretty excited about. This is a new money experiment built on top of Ethereum. We're talking about Liquity today. Robert Lauko is the co-founder. He is our guest. Once again, this is your opportunity to ask questions of Robert about the project, where it's going, where it's headed, anything burning in your mind. David and I, of course, we'll get you started. David, new money experiments on Ethereum. It's one of our favorite things to talk about. What's the TLDR of Liquity? Why did we decide to bring them on for this Ask Me Anything?
Yeah, the TLDR, and I actually use Liquity as an example in my CoinDesk talk on Monday. The TLDR is that DeFi is in this inevitable, highly competitive environment for capital efficiency. And to me, that's what Liquity represents. It's one of the newer projects that have come and debuted on Ethereum, and it's seen a ton of success in terms of just TVL. Like, tons of ETH has been deposited into Liquity, and the reason why...
Billions,
yeah. We'll get those numbers up in a sec. And the reason why is because it offers really competitive capital efficiency rates. 110% collateralization ratio and 0% interest rates, right? Like 0% interest rates on a loan, like there is something that you pay. So we'll get into those details, but like really competitive, 110% collateralization ratio, 0% interest rates. Like where else in DeFi can you get those loans? And that's kind of the story and the through line of DeFi to me is capital efficiency, capital efficiency, capital efficiency. And so that's my rationale for, you know, why Liquity has seen such success and why there's been so much demand to get this AMA with Robert. Small disclaimer, I have a small seed investment into Liquity. And so I have that to disclose, I guess. So perhaps some subconscious bias, but just know that. And I think without further ado, Ryan, should we just get into it?
We should. I have one quick question for you as well. Not only is this a lending protocol, of course, this is a stable coin, right?
Yes. Oh, very, very important detail. Yeah, it's a governance minimized stable coin. And so one of the through lines that we will be asking Robert is why governance minimization? Always a good question. But also, like, to what degree governance minimization, right? Like, there's always a spectrum. Good to know.
Stablecoin, crypto dollars, new money experiments, all really exciting things. Guys, we will be back with Robert. Bring your questions in just a minute. But before we bring Robert on, we want to thank the sponsors who made this episode possible.
Aave is a borrowing and lending protocol on Ethereum and just recently released Aave version 2, which has a ton of cool new features that makes using Aave even more powerful. With Aave, you can leverage the full power of DeFi, Money Legos, Yield, and composability all in one application. On Aave, there are a ton of assets that you can deposit in order to gain yield, and all of those same assets can also be borrowed from the protocol if you have deposited collateral. Here you can see me getting a 200 USDC loan against my portfolio of a number of different DeFi tokens and ETH. I'll choose a variable interest rate because it's a lower rate than the stable interest rate option, but I could choose the stable interest rate option if I wanted to lock that interest rate in permanently. One of Aave's V2 features is the ability to swap collateral without having to withdraw your assets, trade them on Uniswap, and then deposit them back into Aave. Aave does all of this for you, all in one seamless transaction, so you don't have to repay loans in order to change the collateral you have backing them. Check out the power of Aave at aave.com. That's Aave.com. Balancer is DeFi's most powerful automated market maker. Typical AMMs just have two tokens inside of one liquidity pool, which can lead to fractured liquidity across the many pairs in DeFi. With Balancer, you can access the full power of multiple tokens inside of one single AMM, which unlocks an entirely new playing field of possibility. This makes Balancer an awesome building block for so many different use cases. Balancer pools can make asset indexes, but instead of paying fees to portfolio managers, Balancer lets you collect fees from traders who use your portfolio for liquidity. Additionally, Balancer smart pools can be programmed to have properties that change according to predetermined rules, such as changing the swap fee based on market conditions, or even liquidity bootstrapping pools, which can help you launch and distribute your token with day one liquidity. At Bankless, we used a liquidity bootstrapping pool to sell our BAP t-shirts to much success. Balancer V2 brings powerful new features that makes your money work even harder for you. In V2, idle tokens are capable of generating yield in DeFi without sacrificing liquidity in the pool. To top things off, Balancer is reimbursing all guests gas costs with BAV rewards, meaning that all your gas costs are returned to your wallet with the Balancer governance token. Balancer's mission is to become the primary source of liquidity in DeFi by providing the most flexible and powerful platform for asset management and decentralized exchange. Dive into the Balancer pools at pools.balancer.exchange.
Guys, we are back with this Bankless Ask Me Anything. We're here with Robert Lauko, who's the founder of Liquity. That is going to be the subject of today, this new monetary experiment on Ethereum called Liquity. Robert has a PhD in law, interesting background. He's also previously a researcher at Definity. So he's seen other blockchains too. I believe he started this project in 2019 as well. So he's been in the DeFi space for a while too. Robert, it's great to have you on Bankless. How are you doing today?
Hi, yeah, thank you. So I'm really happy to be on the show and grateful to have this occasion. And yeah, I'm feeling great today.
That's awesome. Okay, so I'm going to be kind of almost the dumb cop here, Robert, because I think David knows a lot more about Liquity than I do. So I'm going to be the guy asking the really kind of dumb novice beginner type questions. And of course, in DeFi, guys, I say dumb questions. There are no dumb questions. We're all on this exploration journey together. Well, yes, I'll try not to ask the really, really dumb questions, just the novice questions. So Robert, let's start here. What really is Liquity? So it sounds like it's a stable coin or maybe kind of a crypto dollar, but what is it at the 20,000 foot view?
So what Liquity really is all about is borrowing, and it tries to make borrowing as attractive as possible to the borrower. And it does that by basically improving or by offering two things, one of them being interest-free loans in a stablecoin that it can issue to the borrower itself. And the other advantage is that the loans are only need to be collateralized at 110% collateral ratio. So the loans, they are collateralized with Ether. That's our sole collateral type. And that's how the system basically secures the loans. And then the whole system is completely decentralized, immutable, and it's based on a network of decentralized frontends, which is also kind of unique in the DeFi space.
So Robert, would you say that borrowing is the main attraction? Because I noticed you started there. It's kind of a borrowing protocol. Or would you say the stablecoin output, the crypto dollar output is the main attraction? Or are these like kind of two sides of the same coin in your mind?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it all started with borrowing. Like I really had this idea like 1.5 or even 2 years ago what really makes borrowing most attractive, and the two aspects that I just mentioned are among like the most important ones. So it all started with borrowing, but then I realized that in order to achieve those two goals, you need to be able to mint your own currency, because otherwise you have capital costs. I mean, if you're like a matchmaker or you're like a pool-based platform which takes money from lenders and gives it out to borrowers, then you would need to pay some interest to the lenders. So you cannot offer your loans for free or interest-free to the borrowers. So I quickly realized that, hey, this is only possible if we mint our own token. And normally people, they want to get a loan denominated in something like in some currency that they are familiar with and the currency in which they receive their salaries. And that's for many people, the US dollar. And so it made just sense to create a borrowing platform with this kind of stablecoin in mind, which is a US dollar pegged stablecoin, which allows us to offer those two benefits.
So what is the main driver here then? Is it kind of in terms of expansion and I guess success of Liquity? Is it demand for LUSD, the coin itself, or is it demand for the unique borrowing opportunities that Liquity provides?
I mean, at the end of the day, we need both, because the system needs to reach some equilibrium. So there needs to be demand for the loans, but also demand for holding or investing or like using the LUSD. LUSD is the name of our stablecoin. So we have basically incentives for both in place. So for the borrowers, it's like we already like mentioned them, the fact that they are attractive. But then on the other hand, we also needed to make sure that you can do something with your LUSD that you borrow. I mean, either you sell it to other people who can do something with it, or even you don't need to sell it if you decide to put it in something we call a stability pool, which is our main mechanism to liquidate positions. I can maybe delve into more into that like later, but with this stability pool, we already created something that drives demand for buying and holding LUSD, our stablecoin. And on top of that, or in addition to that, we also have a few pools in other systems, like now on Curve. We had one on Uniswap, now it's on Curve, where we give out rewards to the LPs.
So let's go into that stabilization mechanism, Robert, because if we take a traditional model of like a central bank and they offer 0% interest rates, like there's going to be a ton of currency issuance, right? Like if you make money free for people, people are going to print it, right? And so that's is kind of the law of incentives, right? And so if there's so much like easy access to, you know, 0% interest rates with liquidity, liquidity, where does the stabilization of LUSD come from? Why doesn't it just drop down to like, you know, 0.99 cents, 0.8 cents? Like where does the floor price for LUSD come from?
I would say we have two different mechanisms that help us to achieve a stable currency. And one of them is just this like softbank mechanism that is already present in other systems like MakerDAO, where borrowers have an incentive to borrow whenever the token is overpriced or overvalued, and they have a stronger incentive to repay whenever it's undervalued. But we wanted to have something which is stronger than that. So what we added is a redemption facility, or redemption opportunity for every LUSD holder. And that basically means that you have this kind of right to exchange your tokens at face value for Ether. So you get like for 100 LUSD, you would get back $100 worth of Ether from the system. And that, of course, offers an arbitrage cycle or possibility whenever the price trades significantly below $1, because you can just buy the LUSD on the market for less than $1 and exchange it through this redemption for something that's more than $1 and then sell it and make a profit. So that's just one side, like this throttles.
Before you go on to the next one, I want to just drill that home a little bit, because I think the reasons why you are able to do this and why LSD is able to be stabilized this way, and correct me if I'm wrong, is
LUSD, that, David. LSD.
Pardon me.
Just saying.
Pardon me. Only one letter off. And so the reason why Liquity is able to stabilize LUSD is because it has extra strong commitments to Ether, the asset, as the only collateral, right? And so because Liquity is governance minimized and it only has one collateral type, which is Ether, which has very strong competitive risk parameters, you are able to offer this redemption rate regardless of what the secondary market price of LUSD is. Is that correct?
I would say, I mean, it makes it much easier to offer this redemption because we only need one. We only need to care about like one collateral type. I mean, in a multi-asset or multi-collateral system, it would be much more difficult and harder to achieve the same redemption facility. I mean, Ether has this nice property of being decentralized and being like the base currency of the Ethereum network. So, of course, it also adds to the stability of the system as a whole. Right. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. All right. So let's go into the secondary mechanism about how LUSD is stabilized.
Yeah. So I mentioned that we have this redemption, which kicks in when the price drops below $1. And probably our system could have done just with this mechanism. So the secondary mechanisms, like a nice to have in some way, like not a necessity. But we'd also wanted to minimize redemptions as far as we could, because redemptions, they affect the borrowers. Because basically what the system does when somebody redeems LUSD for Ether, then it would take the Ether from the borrower with the riskiest position. By riskiest, I mean with the lowest collateral ratio. So redemption from the borrower's perspective means premature repayment, which may not be like to the interest of the borrower. So that's why we wanted to minimize this friction for the lowest collateralized borrowers by introducing a fee. And it's basically a double fee because we have a base rate that determines two fees, that determines a borrowing fee and a redemption fee. Now, as the name already says, the redemption fee is a fee on the redeemed amount and it's a percentage. And the borrowing fee is a one-off fee, like a fee that you pay upfront, but only once when you borrow. And it's also determined as a percentage of the borrowed amount. And both of fees, they are basically the same, or except for some like minor exceptions, but normally they move in tandem. And the way the system determines the fees is that it would measure like the amounts or the volumes of redemptions that happen during a time period, and it would adapt the fee. Like whenever somebody redeems, the fee would go up. And if no redemptions happen over some time period, then the fee would decay slowly and again reach the minimum. And the minimum here is 0.5% for both fees. Like there is this minimum cost of a loan, which is 0.5%.
So Robert, can you walk me through really quick? Let's say I want to borrow $1,000, right? Mm-hmm. LUSD. What fees am I paying? How much are they right now?
So right now, I guess it's 0.53 or 54%. So it's almost the minimum. So you would basically then pay a $5.40. Like you don't get this amount. It's still part of your debt. Like basically when you borrow 1,000 LSD against, let's say, 2 Ether, then you only get 900. Yes, exactly. Like you get 995, but your debt would be 1,000. That's what happens.
Okay. And you pay that up front. You don't actually pay it, but it's just part. It's rolled into the loan up front. And that is the only fee. There's no interest fee.
That's the only fee. And also I want to clarify here, because that gets often confused, like the redemption is not about repaying your loan. Like when a borrower repays their own position, we call them troves. Like when a borrower repays the trove, there is no additional fee on that. Like repayment is for free. I mean, the only thing is that this kind of borrowing fee was added to the initial debt.
So there's no redemption fee, just to clarify. The only fee you're paying is when you take out the loan initially, and that fee will fluctuate, but that is the only fee you're paying. And you don't actually pay that. It just kind of comes out of it's rolled into the loan upfront. That's it.
Right. So we wouldn't use the term redemption for like this process of repaying and retrieving your collateral. I guess it's better to like use the term maybe retrieval or repayment for that, because we are using redemption very specifically for this broader type of redemption, which is, let's say, also a thing in Terra, for example, or in centralized or centrally backed stablecoins like USDC, where any holder of USDC can exchange USDC for US dollars.
Ah.
And that's the difference. So
I see. So you're saying use the term redemption when somebody is exchanging LUSD for ETH, right? That's the term you use. And then retrieval when you're paying off a loan, essentially.
Yeah, or repayment and then retrieval of your collateral.
Right? That's cool.
And so instead of having the interest rates paid over time in LUSD denominated terms, you guys offer 0%, but you've taken that fee and put it somewhere else, which is a fee on the principal upon deposit, right? And so that, this isn't completely magic. There is a fee somewhere, but instead of on the actual loan, it's on the actual deposit. And this is just one of the principles that we speak of on Bankless. Like, if you can build it, someone will build it, right? And so somebody has built this credit facility where instead of charging you interest rates over time, it just charges you as a deposit. And you said that there is like a mechanism that reminds me of the Rye system with control theory, where there are inputs and outputs, and the fee will go up or down based on those inputs and outputs, but specifically not governance. It's more of a more autonomous, more robotic system. And so that control theory of how the fee raises and lowers in an algorithmic fashion and also only have Ether, only having Ether as collateral is like some of the probably the two biggest reasons why we consider LUSD a governance minimized stablecoin. Anything you want to add to that? And did I get that right?
Yeah, that's a great summary. It's really governance. Maybe you cannot say it's governance free because it's still reliant on an oracle which has its own governance. But except for the oracle, there is no single parameter or anything that we, like as a company or the team or whoever, like a governance body could change or adapt. So.
And the oracle is Chainlink right now?
That's true. We have a fallback oracle, by the way. So if Chainlink fails, and that's also part of our like philosophy, we have a number of rules that are all algorithmically determined. Like basically they would see, like detect if there is an issue with Chainlink, and then they would fall back, or the system would then use Tellor. And so it can also switch back when Chainlink comes back. So there's this.
I just want to wrap my head around the borrowing piece. Again, so one thing that used to drive me a little bit crazy about Maker from a borrower's perspective is you go and you borrow on Maker, right? And then 1 month you're happy because the rates are 2%. And then something happens in crypto. The next month, right, your rates are suddenly double digit. You know, I've seen rates, I don't know if this was 2018 or 2019. It's all a blur to me now, Robert, but like 20%+ on a loan that you kind of took out when rates were like 1 or 2%. This can't happen with liquidity because you're paying up front. And it, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can choose, I'm not going to use the word redemption. You could choose to retrieve the loan, pay off the loan at any point in time. But you don't have to worry about that variability in interest rate. Is that correct?
Right. That's exactly one of the selling points that this one-off fee makes the loans not only cheaper if you have a long-term perspective, but also much more predictable because you don't have...
And that's just it. You kind of have to have a long-term perspective because you are paying this fixed percent up front. Right. So like you're not going to want to take this loan for a couple of days and then... Right. Then retrieve it.
And you can't go in and out of loans all the time. Like with Aave and Compound and Maker, you can go in and out, raise your loan, lower your loan. Like you can kind of high touch loans. To me, an LUSD loan via Liquity is more of a low touch, long term time horizon perspective kind of loan.
Exactly. Yeah. There's this trade off that, I mean, for very short term loans, it the fee can be significant, but I guess already after 1 month, like with the current Maker fees, if you compare it, it would become attractive.
Very cool. All right. So you talked in there, Robert, a little bit about LUSD and its redemption mechanism as well. We've had some turbulence lately in crypto, right? Some like pretty historic even drops lately. So can you talk a little bit about how LUSD as a stablecoin has, or maybe crypto dollar, David, I don't know what term you'd use for this.
Crypto dollar.
Crypto dollar. LUSD as a collateral-backed, ETH-backed crypto dollar, how it's performed. I don't know if the best place to pull this up is on CoinGecko, but that's where I'm seeing some prices. And it looks like this is the 30-day. It looks like it held up fairly well. You know, maybe during some of these days on Wednesday, Black Wednesday. Is that what we're calling it? I don't know. Dark gray Wednesday. It wasn't great. We had some variance. Can you talk a little bit about that? Was this kind of to your expectations from a band of about, you know, 98 cents to stretching to $1.02, like kind of a 4 cent band on the crypto dollar? Or like, what's your take? How did it hold up during this recent market turbulence?
Yeah, maybe one note on that. So we just noticed that this chart may not be reflect the real price because it had apparently has some issues with the curve pool. So I mean, our largest LUSD pools are currently on curve, and from what we can see there, I mean, we just created our own chart. It was a bit more volatile around like May 20th or when this happened, but the deviation was a bit lower. I guess it wasn't more than 3 cents, at least on curve. So yeah, but I mean, there was there were a few spikes in both directions, which I mean, it's hard to say why that happened. So we, like, what we can say, I mean, what we would expect is that whenever there is a sharp Ether price drop, then people would want to repay their loans, or some people would want to top up their collateral, but others don't have the means. So the only thing that they can do is either partially or fully repay the loans to prevent liquidation. I mean, they don't want to be liquidated because then they lose even more. So, and if people are trying to close their loans, so to say, that would have an impact on the LUSD price. So normally, or in theory, that should rather drive the price up than down. And that's what happened with DAI and USDC a year ago, or some, like a bit more than a year ago, in this Black Swan event. And there were like there are also some like academic papers on that very topic. But now in our situation, it was a bit different. So around that day and also the following days, the price, it was hovering maybe around 99, 98, 99 cents. And the reason for that, I guess, I mean, it's hard to tell, is that, I mean, we have this stability pool. So in our system, people, many borrowers have their own tokens in the stability pool. And if they don't, they can, or when if there is somebody in the pool, he may have an incentive to take out the LUSD from the pool and put it like, or sell it somewhere in the market, because this pool gets less attractive as the LUSD drops below $1. So this kind of stability pool can also act as a stabilizer in some way. So it would basically give more liquidity to the market so that borrowers have more liquidity available to buy in order to repay the loan. So that may be one reason why we didn't have this kind of sudden spike upwards. And also another reason is maybe that, I mean, LUSD is quite a new liquid is quite a new project, and LUSD is not acting as a safe haven, maybe as USDC will, when people are like just selling their Ether for an like whatever stable currency.
Yeah, I guess I was going to say, like, it seemed to perform relatively well in not quite a black swan, but a gray swan type event. 60% Ether loss.
We would call that a black swan if the COVID crash hadn't already happened.
Yeah. Or definitely if we were in mainstream finance, that would be like, incredible volatility, unprecedented volatility. Mm-hmm. But like, I guess it seems to me LUSD held up fairly well in these mm-hmm. types of conditions. So it's nice to, I mean, you guys are, LUSD is like what, a month or so in, launched in April, and you have one of these 60% drawdowns in month two. Not too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we are really happy with this outcome, and it was like an early stress test of our system. And I guess this will also give some users or some prospective users like confidence in the system, so that they know, oh, the system has already survived something which is almost a black swan event. So they should trust it even more than before.
Robert, you mentioned that the CoinGecko price for LUSD might not be the best place to view the price. Where do you go when you want to see the general value of LUSD on the secondary markets? Is there a resource that we can point our listeners to?
So we just created a new Dune page for the curve price. I'm not sure if I can share it. Maybe I could do that.
Put a link in the chat, and I'll. Yeah. I'll show it on my screen in just a minute. Cool.
And I'll put it into the YouTube comments.
Right. I think I have it right ready. Cool.
Robert.
It's still a work in progress, so it this may change a little bit.
Okay. Let me just show that really quick. So this is Dune. Man, Dune does everything, don't they? it's just still loading. Let me share it as soon as it loads here.
Cool.
I hope my Dev who created this will forgive me for showing off his like early work. It's like kind of in progress. So you see in the middle mm-hmm. chart, it is, we have to, the axes are a bit like off, but you can see that there was this like underpriced event. But if you hover over it, it should show, I guess, the price. it was like 3 cents off the USDC.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy. Because, like, you know, three cents is far off the peg, but like we have to put things into perspective. Ether dropped 60%. 3% off the dollar for a, you know, call it 24, not even 24 hours, relatively is like really good. That is what stability looks like.
Well, last time. So just what's interesting, I think, about liquidity in this protocol is like last time we had such an event, 60% drawdown, was actually Black Thursday in March. And I remember looking at Maker that day and just like crossing my fingers, like, come on, Dai. Come on, pull through. But like prices spiked to $0.08, $0.09, $1.10 on some exchanges. And what's interesting about that is the remedy, part of the remedy following Black Thursday for Maker was, what are we going to do? We have to add a whole bunch of centralized, collateralized bank crypto dollars. I'm using the term accurately now, David, not stablecoins, crypto dollars. So USDC. And now we have a point where, you know, the compilation of DAI has changed over time and it's gone up and down. But now I think it's something like a third of DAI is backed by USDC. And as advocates, like the show is called Bankless, right? Like the show is called Bankless, guys. Coinbase is, God bless them, a crypto bank. We like them as a bridge to this new world. But if all we're left with is crypto dollars from a crypto bank, what have we accomplished here?
Right.
So that's why this is a really interesting niche. Like Maker, great experiment. It's running, hugely supportive of MKR, DAI, DeFi. But this is another experiment, and it's not backed by any centralized bank crypto dollars. It's backed purely by ETH, and it held up in a gray swan 60% drawdown event. That's what's cool here, in my opinion.
Yeah, there is something to note of you know, existential risk of like what happens if all of MakerDAO is really just one collateral type, and if that one collateral type is Ether, that's one thing. If that one collateral type is a USDC, there's existential risk with you know, Circle and whoever controls the USDC smart contracts kind of has leverage over the MakerDAO system. But then also it ultimately ends up just becoming an extension of the actual central bank, right? If the collateral is just like the dollar, the actual dollar, not crypto dollars. And so comparing and contrasting Maker to something like Liquity is a really helpful in this scenario, and kind of why, like, you know, Ryan and I, when we put on our ETH Maxi hats and we see an LUSD that's
Bankless Maxi, sir.
Bankless Maxi hats. Yeah. Well, Ether as the most, one of the most bankless assets in the world. it's very, very competitive to a system that seems to be like, like Ether to me is like the uncorruptible asset, right? And so having the uncorruptible asset as the only collateral type, and then having that stablecoin stay up, awesome.
Robert, awesome. I got to ask here, because like this seems like Maker with tweaks. Really cool tweaks, to be honest. What about that Oracle thing? Can we get that out? So Chainlink, had Chainlink got on, explained Oracles to us. Awesome. But it is also an attack vector. Do you have any thoughts on how Oracles might progress and whether we can get to an even more trustless set of Oracles or Oracle solution with Liquity?
Yeah, that's an involved question. So, I mean, given that we cannot upgrade our system, even if a new Oracle became available in the future, we cannot like simply just take it and include it. I mean, we would need to deploy a new version, but I mean, maybe that would be a good reason at some point for a version 2. But generally speaking, I don't quite see that many options on the in the Oracle space right now that would be like a good alternative. I mean, we have Tellor, for example, as our fallback. I mean, it has this kind of decentralization approach as well, which I really like. But it's the thing that I see with Oracles is that there is a very sharp or difficult trade-off between security and decentralization. Because, I mean, at least with the current gas prices, Oracle providers need to be paid or at least compensated for the costs. And if you want to do that in a completely decentralized fashion, somebody needs to pay for it. And this may become an issue because you also need to somehow, I mean, if you do it like really decentralized, then you need stakes that are locked up that can be punished or slashed if people misreport or like the providers misbehave. So you need to be able to extract enough revenue from your users using your Oracle so that you can give it back to the Oracle price providers or give back like a high enough yield so that they would stake like millions or billions of Ether or dollars worth of Ether so that you can then secure a system that now like our system has like maybe a TVL of 2.5 billions. So you need to create an Oracle that has a similar TVL that the system or even a higher TVL that the DeFi applications that it is powering. And that's kind of difficult to achieve.
What about Uniswap and sort of a time-weighted average Oracle solution that they have put together? Is that helpful in any way?
So it also comes with its own trade-offs. And I'm not even thinking of the fact that you have this TWAP period where you have the issue that you need to set like a long enough period in order to have higher attack costs, but then your Oracle won't be as like up to date. But there is this other thing. I mean, Uniswap is only able to give you a price for between two tokens. And then like what would be the other token against which we can measure LUSD? I mean, we can measure it either against our competitors, so to say, stablecoin or against centralized stablecoin. So then it becomes it inherits these issues from like the fact that centralized stablecoins may go down maybe in the future, and then this would also have an effect on the Oracle price. So even that wouldn't be a perfect solution.
Robert, one last thing before we break for sponsors. I just want to show this screen, which is ETH locked in liquidity. This is ETH locked in liquidity over time, April 5th. All the way to now, we've had over a million ETH locked in liquidity.
1%
and 1%, $5 billion at its peak, and of course that's related to price of ETH too. How did this happen so fast?
Yeah, we were blown away by this growth ourselves. Already during the first 10 days, it reached 1 billion, and then around 2 weeks into the life of Liquity, there was one big trove or like a super.
This one?
Big trove was, yeah.
Was I think I see it.
I mean, we don't know it for sure, but rumors have it that it was Justin Sun who just opened like a trove with 1,000 Ether, which is kind of crazy. But even like without him, I guess the rest is already remarkably high. And I mean, we wouldn't have expected this, but now it's there and it happened like amazingly fast.
When liquidity on Tron, sir, is it coming? You don't have to answer that question.
Robert, we have a bunch of YouTube questions that we want to get to, and thanks everyone who have been in the YouTube asking questions and patiently waiting for me and Ryan to get to those. So in the second half of this AMA, we're going to get to all of those YouTube questions, but first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. Bankless is proud to be supported by Uniswap. Uniswap is a new paradigm in asset exchange infrastructure. Instead of a cumbersome order book system where trades are matched with other humans, Uniswap is an autonomous piece of software on Ethereum, which is what Ryan and I call a money robot. No human counterparties or centralized intermediaries, just autonomous code on Ethereum. Input the token you want to sell and receive the token you want to buy. Something brand new in the Uniswap ecosystem is the Uniswap Grants program is now accepting applications for grants. We have been saying this for a while and we'll say it again. DAOs have money and they are in need of labor. If you think that you have something to contribute to the Uniswap DAO, apply for a grant to Uniswap. Just look at the size of the Uniswap treasury. It's almost $3 billion. This mountain of capital is looking for labor. Do you have something of value to contribute to the Uniswap DAO? No matter how big or small your idea is, you can apply for a uni grant at unigrants.org and help steer Uniswap in the direction that you think it should go. That's exactly what we did to get Uniswap to be a sponsor for Bankless, and you can do the same for your project. Thank you, Uniswap, for sponsoring Bankless.
Gemini is the world's most trusted cryptocurrency exchange. I've been a customer of Gemini since I first got into crypto in 2017, and it's been my main exchange of choice to make my crypto buys and sells. Gemini is available in all 50 states and in over 50 countries worldwide, and on Gemini there are markets for over 30 various different crypto assets, including many of the hot DeFi tokens, and it's one of the few exchanges that has liquid DAI markets. Gemini just launched their Earn program, where you can earn up to 7.4% interest on 26 various crypto assets. If you're tired of paying fees in DeFi, or you don't want to worry about DeFi exploits, but you still want to earn interest on your crypto assets, Gemini Earn is the product for you. Another product I'm stoked to get my hands on is the Gemini Crypto Back Credit Card, which gives you 3% cash back on all of your purchases, but paid to you in your preferred crypto asset. When I get my Gemini credit card, I'm going to make sure that I get my cash back in ETH. So whenever I buy something, I get a little bit of ETH bonus back to me at the same time. You can open up a free account in under 3 minutes at gemini.com/gobankless. And if you trade more than $100 within the first 30 days after sign up, you'll be gifted a free $15 Bitcoin bonus. Check them out at gemini.com/gobankless.
All right, guys, we are back with Robert from Liquity, and we have a bunch of questions from the YouTube that we want to get through, starting with a question from Justin Dover. Are there any other assets coming to Liquity other than Ether? Is that possible, and is that something that's on the roadmap?
It's technically impossible with the current version, and it's not in our short-term, or not part of our short-term roadmap, but we are still open for future asset types that become available and that are suitable for Liquity being like a decentralized and like system. So those collateral types need to fulfill a certain set of criteria, like being large enough, like the market cap needs to be like large enough so that we don't become the main driver of the price. And also it should be decentralized and like high quality, just like to be short.
And so then maybe go ahead.
Yeah, so when this becomes available, we would of course evaluate the possibilities and see what we can do out of it.
Robert, so, when I say things like ETH is the only trustless collateral on Ethereum, people sometimes call me an ETH maxi. Sir, are you an ETH maxi?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm not an ETH maxi. So I think ETH is just trustless in its own way. I mean, in its own right, and nothing else comes really close. But you never know what will happen in the future and what people come up with. So you should always stay open for new innovations. And yeah, I mean, that's, I think, my philosophy.
There's we've come across a number of conversations that have had some sort of just like, sure, that's possible, but we would have to redeploy Liquity into like a version 2, right? Like if we wanted to update the oracles, if we wanted to add a collateral type. So is that something that you guys are chewing on, like a Liquity version 2, where we take a bunch of positive ideas and integrate them? Or is this something that the jury's still kind of out on and you guys aren't yet convinced about?
We are in this phase that our system is still young, and there are a few things that have already come up that we are like evaluating some inputs or some things that we may want to improve in a future version. But I mean, it's not like currently our short-term goal that we would start working on version 2, but we keep collecting improvements, new ideas that could at some point in the future lead to a version 2 that would be like a massive improvement over the current system.
And Robert, am I right here when we talk about version 2s, right? Like we're not talking about governance being able to vote and, you know, change kind of multi-sig holders and redeploy updates and deploy updates, that sort of thing. We're talking about a version 2 in the way like Uniswap has a version 2, where version 1 doesn't really die. You know, version 2 comes along, version 3 comes along. And if the market wants those versions, then it goes and starts using them. That's sort of the governance by fork, I guess, approach that you guys are taking too, similar to Uniswap. Is that correct?
Exactly. So that's the idea, that people would choose either to leave or stay.
Love that.
Another question from Justin Dover. Do you have any migration plans to go to Optimism, Polygon, perhaps Arbitrum? Do you have any implementations with L2s that you guys are working on?
That's a bit similar, though we have maybe put a bit more effort into exploring those solutions. We are currently in this wait and see phase. I mean, we see that there are a few options, like there is Polygon, which is already quite popular. But there are a few technical issues with all of the solutions that we have come across. So it's not like as easy that you could just simply take the system and deploy it on an L2 solution, even though they are EVM compatible, but there are a few minor details that are not that minor that you need to change. And we don't want to rush into those in this decision. Like, probably there will be something because Ether or Ethereum is just not scalable. And it would be nice, like an auxiliary system that's much faster. But for the meantime, I would say it's more real, or for the short term, it's more realistic to expect some maybe like only partial integrations, maybe in the sense that LUSD would become tradable on a layer two solution so that you can trade it like for much lower gas costs over there and then maybe bridge it, like get back to the main chain, like through a bridge.
What about LUSD integrations into various different DeFi apps? We just talked about how, you know, Ryan and I have, you know, some concerns in the back of our minds about like too much USDC inside of MakerDAO to help stabilize the DAI price. Like, what about LUSD in MakerDAO? Like, that I think would be a positive step in a good direction. Any other places where LUSD can get integrated into DeFi that you guys have your sights on?
Yeah, so MakerDAO would be interesting, though we haven't really thought of that, right? So other DeFi projects that could be interesting are like Alchemix, for example, but also Frax, where it could be used as collateral. I mean, there are also other places which are a bit easier or even more obvious, like just the DEXs, like Curve and other maybe SushiSwap, where we would just spread, like make sure that like liquidity is available on different places. And yeah, I mean, we are also like happy to see that some wallet and automation services are popping up, or at least they are now close to ready to integrate our system. And to name a few, I mean, yeah, I'm not sure if I should name them, so, but there will be some news on that in the short term future. Like, you know, we are already on Zerion and we are also on Argent, but they're similar, like automation tools.
Yeah, that's super cool. Like, we do not want DeFi to be dependent on centralized bank crypto dollars, right? And like with USDT and USDC, like these are all options and alternatives. But if DeFi becomes dependent on these, then we lose something. So having LUSD there is really fantastic. The other thing that I find interesting is you guys don't build your own user interfaces, which is kind of different, right? So like your approach with user interfaces, correct me if I'm wrong, is like you're providing the smart contract infrastructure, you're building the protocol, but there's no like official blessed Liquidy user interface. You're depending on like Zapper or Zerion or anyone who wants to spin up their own user interface. And so we have tons of different UIs available. Is that the case? And why that decision?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's not as that we wouldn't or that we haven't released any UI. It's just that we are not running it. So what we did is we launched with the relatively basic bare bones UI launch kit, which we provided for free, like for download. And the protocol has some enshrined incentives that make it attractive for third parties to run a front end, because they get like a share of the reward based on the turnover that they generate or the users generate. And I mean, what we expect from that is some kind of competition and innovation from our front end operators, because they are like competing with each other, and they also have another lever, which is a kickback rate. They can set a rate which determines which part of the reward should go to the end user and which part of the reward should remain with the front end. And then also they can compete by adding new features, by improving upon our launch kit. And we have already seen some innovation, but we expect to see more in the future. And we know that some frontends are already working on really interesting features, which will become available probably in the next few weeks.
Maybe the Bankless DAO is listening to this. So there's some incentive to build frontends to Bankless products. Somewhat interesting. Can we talk about the incentive? So is this like almost like a liquidity mining type campaign? So if somebody builds a front end, what is the incentive? And maybe this turns into the liquidity tokens next, LQTY. Can you talk about the incentives there? And let's start talking about that token too.
Yeah, maybe I should start with the token. At the beginning, mentioned we have two fees, like the system generates revenue from the borrowing fee and the redemption fee, and it captures this revenue and it gives it out or it pays it to the stakers of our secondary token, the LQTY. So everybody can stake the token and then become eligible for a pro rata share of the fee revenue. So that's what makes the token valuable in the first place. And on top of that, we have a liquidity or mining or yield farming system, if you want to use that word, which basically gives the stability depositors, like whoever secures the system by depositing LUSD to the stability pool, would then become eligible for like kind of a community payout. Like the system would pay out like newly minted LQTY tokens to those who are in the pool, like again, on a pro rata basis. So the more you deposit to the stability pool, the larger your share is. And then you can basically by depositing LUSD to the pool, you will get some LQTY over time. And then you can stake your LQTY in order to get the fee revenue. So that's the system, how it plays together. And then also we have the front ends and they tie in through the stability pool. So whenever a user that goes through a specific front end deposits LUSD to the stability pool, then this user would become eligible for like getting a continuous payout of liquidity tokens. But the system would maybe only pay out 95% to this user because this 5% would remain with the front end. Like the front end could set this kind of kickback rate, and then the 95% would be the kickback, which is paid out to user, and the 5% would stay with the front end.
It's like a referral fee, basically.
Yes, and it's based on the turnover, so it's not just based on user count, but
It's also adding a ton of surface area for competition, which at the end of the day, competition is always good for the customer. And so I think it's pretty cool that you're leaving a lot of competitive innovation into the hands of the implementers rather than the team itself. Kevin Iwaki on our State of the Nation stream yesterday talked about decentralizing stress. And so handing off responsibility over to people who want to compete for reward sounds like an interesting way to do that. Robert, we're coming down to the end of our time here. And so we just have a few more questions that we want to get through. And everyone who's watching on the YouTube, thanks for being here. It's your last chance to get in questions. Also subscribe to the channel and like the video. And Robert, I want to ask about the LQTY token, the liquidity token, using the MKR token as a mental model. MKR gets minted or issued or diluted to in the event of liquidations where the system cannot come up with enough collateral. Is there a similar mechanism with the LQTY token, or what is the LQTY token in response or in relationship to the protocol?
We don't have a similar mechanism, so there is no minting in case of an emergency. So the LQTY token has a hard cap. It's 100 million on its supply. What we have instead is a recovery mode, which kind of acts as a lost, like as a way to rescue the system in case of an under collateralization risk, but we don't need to dilute the LQTY supply.
And so how does the LQTY token capture value? I'm assuming there's some sort of fee capture mechanism going into the liquidity token.
Yeah, so we have the two fees, the borrowing fee and the redemption fee, and they are both captured and paid out to the stakers of Equity Y tokens.
So it's not a buyback and burn model. It's a fee revenue model. It's a capital asset.
It's like a dividend payout rather than a buyback.
Why do you like that better?
Mm-hmm. Good question. It's somehow easier to reason about, I would say. Though economically speaking, I think in a perfectly rational world, the two should be economically equivalent. But for some people, it's easier to reason about, like, or that you can keep your principal, like you gain something. It's like psychologically maybe more attractive than just the outlook of a rising token price.
Why did you say over the long term, a buyback and burn model or a capital asset model is logically the same? How do those converge upon the same things over time?
It's probably hard to tell. I mean, the idea is that when you burn tokens, you would do that, to get some value. I mean, there is some reason why the system can burn tokens, and that's like for you capture the fee through burning, and it's the same value that you can capture through burning that you would be able to pay out to the stakers. Maybe there is one slight difference here, which is that when you stake, there will always be non-stakers. Like, it's not realistic to assume that 100% of the tokens will be staked. So it means that the lazy or maybe the ignorance, they will lose out. So whoever is a staker would get a higher relative share. While with the burning mechanism, every holder benefits in the end because the value
be a bit more active.
Yes.
So how do you think? Do you think that fees paid to the system are going to be relatively stable over the long term, or is there going to be waves of high fees and troughs of low fees? What kind of data or speculation do you have on this?
So what we've seen so far is that the fee revenue is very variable. Like, it varies from day to day, and it can go up by 10x and then plummet by 20x. And it's really, but you have to look at it in a longer term perspective. Like, you cannot say that the revenue will be stable. So that's maybe the part in our system which is a bit unpredictable for the staker. But you also have to take into account that you have no risk. I mean, as a staker, you get your principal back. So it's a yield that you get without any added risk.
I think cool about that is I think we'd only see a design like that in a DeFi protocol. Because in the traditional financial world, that level of variability, I mean, they probably wouldn't like that. You know, a traditional bank having, a 10x spike and then nothing for, a period of time and then another huge spike. But a protocol doesn't care. Anyway, I have a final question for you, Robert. It's been a pleasure having you on today to explain this. Really excited about what Liquity is doing. What other stablecoin or crypto dollar projects out there seem the most interesting to you?
I would say I like the hybrid approach taken by Frax. It's an interesting approach because we have seen that purely algorithmic stablecoins are probably destined to fail, while other protocols like Liquity are need to be over-collateralized. But then there is maybe a middle ground that can work, which is less or even more capital efficient if you look at the macroeconomic numbers than Liquity. But I mean, it's a completely different system. It doesn't use borrowing as its main driver and backing mechanism.
And then in general on the categories, it sounds like you're kind of bearish on purely algorithmic stablecoins. Is that correct? Do you think a good stablecoin crypto dollar design needs to be collateral backed in some form?
I fear that it doesn't really work without any collateral. Now there are some projects like Terra, for example, and Synthetics in a sense that are kind of using their own collateral, which is a bit similar to the algorithmic ones, but also it's also kind of a hybrid approach between the fully algorithmic stablecoins and the fully backed stablecoins. And I mean, they have proven to work so far, but nobody knows what will happen in the future.
And Terra recently had some troubles with that Gray Swan event, but hey, Guayasi on Bankless, let a thousand flowers bloom. We are experimenting. The best protocols will rise to the top over time. So Robert, thank you for guiding us through that.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Robert, if people want to find out more about Liquity and join the community, where should they go?
They should go to liquity.org and just find our Discord and join the community. It's a very active community.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, guys, thank you again for coming to this Bankless weekly, bi-weekly, AMA with Robert from Liquity. If you guys are watching on the YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe because we do this every other week. And we also want to know from you, who do you guys want to have on next on the show? What questions, what projects, what people in the space do you guys have questions for? And that's why you should subscribe to the YouTube. And Ryan, will you please do the canonical disclaimer?
Of course I will. Guys, ETH is risky. DeFi is risky. So is Liquity. All of this stuff is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.